prior to choosing Tombstone, because for the, I think, 3 years before that was always my go-to. I pick Tombstone.
He's been the number one. He's been the number one or two seed of like every season.
Yeah, so he's usually highly rated. This year, I haven't made my final decision because our Thunder East betting pool, we don't final until there's the top 32. The one that's got my most attention right now is Malice.
Well, I called you out on this. Malice just looks like a more stable version of Tombstone. Similar design where it's just a two-wheeled robot so it can pivot really easily, but instead of that huge vertical bar, it has a vertical drum spinner, which is weird. It's the only robot that's really done the drum spinner, but it does it so close to its body that it has a better center of gravity, because that's been Tombstone's problem, is you have to take the first shot in the face from Tombstone, and if you can't do that, you cannot beat this robot. He will win. So with this one, it doesn't look like when it hits, it's spinning off. It's actually holding very stern.
Her and the driver, oof. The first fight with her versus Axe Backwards. Axe Backwards got blowed up.
Okay, Axe Backwards sucks.
It does.
Axe Backwards has lost most of its fights. He's just stuck in there just to be there. That's your little drum spinner. And they tried to make the entire... It looks like a giant drum with two axes on it. And they were bragging before the fight.
Was Malice the one with the, like, Thunder Bay woman cheerleader?
Yes.
The one with fire on her hair?
Absolutely.
I don't know. The one that started screaming bloody murder at the other team like it was a UFC bar brawl?
Yes.
That's my dream. I want Alicia to build a battle bot. She could build that, probably. I mean...
And what, crush two White Claws on her forehead and go screaming across the arena?
Yes, that would be
awesome.
That's
my job.
When there's nobody but your competitors there?
Hey, you gotta get pumped up somehow.
From Jersey Shore?
Yeah,
that
why not?
Fight specifically, though, like, my favorite thing is them bragging Axe Backwards. Oh, you know, we're ready. This is our year. We've worked out the kinks in a robot. In fact, we added a flamethrower to the back of the robot.
I'm sure you did.
They did. Rob.
And it went boom.
Yeah, they had one hit to the flamethrower and the entire robot just exploded.
I remember actually telling Andrew to, like, text me when he watched that fight, and all I get is text boom.
One that didn't get the fight yet, but I'm excited for, because there is a new Canadian team in there, Adam 94. So I don't know their story yet, but in their profile page, they're proudly showing off the Leaf. So I'm curious to see how they're going to do.
But Andrew, the most important robot,
Shmee.
That's what's getting interesting here, is there are new types of bots that they're trying out, and that's something that I'm excited for, because one of them is Malice, seeing a vertical drum spinner. Shmee is a
Rusty.
Long bot.
It's
really long. It doesn't fit inside the battle box. One thing that they were saying there is, how many E's are in it? And he's like,
20.
Oh, no. He said the most he ever wrote was 22, which means that he just kind of makes it up each time of how many E's are in the name. He just probably fills it out till the end of the line with E's.
Just like when he's filling out a digital form, just holds E until it stops.
As I told Rob, like, since it's a connected robot, like, you can see the little links, right? As it goes along. So if one of those gets destroyed, he's probably got like a drawer full of just E's. He just slaps in there and he's like, excellent, more E's.
It is interesting design, though. It's a very long robot, but what it has is it has hinges in the middle, theoretically, against smaller robots, because they put it up against the other longest robot in the competition, probably other than Mammoth, which was just this giant shark bot. So it was the only... Yeah. Probably one of the few robots it can't completely wrap around, but that's its entire strategy, to try to wrap around a robot, and then it has a disc spinner on the bottom that'll just eat at it. So it was a bad fight for that design, but going up against something smaller, like that against Endgame, which ended up beating Tombstone, would be an interesting fight, because I think it's small enough that it would be able to surround it on all four corners, and what can you do when you can't move?
My favorite part of the, like, preliminaries, I guess they are, is the people who show up, like the farmer guy with Rusty, his farm tool made robot with, like, nobody knows what weapon that was. It might have been a spike. It looked like a screwdriver he taped to the front of it.
Hammer?
No, who knows? He found it on the barn and he went, this is gonna stab something.
It's a hammer spike. It's just gonna go.
Like, I swear to God, like, I looked at it. I'm like, did he just slap a screwdriver to the front of that, like, tack weld it and call it a day?
Wait, what are those things that the farmers use to, like, euthanize their guns? Animals? It's like, it's one of those, it's like that blowgun. It's like the pneumatic pressurized. Yeah, it's like, there was a character in the Pennywise movie that had to use one.
I don't remember what exactly they're called, but it's just the thing that shoots a giant iron rod into the, like, forehead.
Is it a rod? I thought it was just like air pressure.
So it's a little, like, rod thing that goes and stabs it. So
that's what it did. It just goes in and just goes.
I don't think so.
I don't think
that
so.
That would have been a very interesting weapon.
That would have been a cooler weapon. This one just kind of went. And thing is, mobility is its biggest issue. Like,
yeah.
Rusty does not control well. He kind of bobs along. It looks like he has square wheels.
Yeah. The guy, when he won, I swear, looked kind of confused at the fact that he won.
Oh, he was not expecting to win. He, like, oh, look, there's a section for use and homicide.
He was going there because he built it. He's the only competitor that is a single man team. He built the robot completely from scratch, out of scrap. He built it a box of scraps. And the other robot, objectively better. It was a flipper. Rusty did have a self-righting mechanism, and when it worked, watching him drive, he was like, oh, it worked.
He self-righted and he stared at it and went, ooh. All right.
Yeah, he was surprised as anyone that it actually self-righted. He's like, oh, it worked the first time. And he just managed to maneuver around to the back and just go, and hit the robot in the one spot, apparently, that it just disabled its driving mechanism. It's like, oh, Rusty wins.
Yeah, like, the guy was just like, and Rusty wins. The farmer guy's just standing there staring at his bot, and he's like, ooh. I won? Are you sure?
I just came here for fun, guys. You needed another guy, and I had a robot. It looked funky.
It looked like, what is it, Chompy? Or
Chomp.
Chomp's weird, like, cousin.
Yeah.
Cousin that came to fight.
Chomp, I'm excited to see. Chomp is completely rebuilt. Chomp was the robot where they had a camera in the front to try to set off its hammer, and it never worked because it was...
Not once.
But it had a really slow self-righting mechanism. They've completely rebuilt Chomp where it looks totally different now. So it also doesn't look like it could flip over that much.
That's another one I'm looking forward to see what they do.
There's a lot more hammer bots. The biggest one I was disappointed in because it was really came down to a bad technical was Fusion. It was another robot that lit itself on fire, except there was no flamethrower.
Fusion.
It was too much power for the motor that they had.
Yeah, so they had a drum spinner on one side and a vertical spinner on the other side. So the robot is all weapons, and they just had them both running the entire time, and the robot burst into flames. It was like, uh-oh. But that was one of the interesting strategy things you could see with one of the returning rookies, Bloodsport, where they just have a vertical bar on top of their robot.
Yeah, here's the thing. When I saw the Bloodsport design, when we were still in the studio and we're talking about BattleBots, I described this bot, but I said the one problem is I can't figure out how to self-right. They figured it out.
Yeah, they just have this giant curved bar, so when it falls, they'll be able to move the spinner, and then it'll roll itself back over. But one thing is, when they were driving, you could see their teamwork, where you had one of them pretty much paying attention, saying, stop the spinner, cool down. And they were paying attention to how hot their stuff got, and moving away, letting the running for a bit, and then coming back and spiking them. And it was really... It's cool to see that sort of strategy when it just seems like, oh, I should run it all of the time. That's the one thing that might be a problem with Malice, though, is the big difference between Malice and Tombstone. Tombstone uses a chain, which allows it to get a lot more power out of it. Malice has a rubber for its weapon, the rubber band. With that, they even talked about it. That can slip, and that's really all. You just need one good hit against that belt, and that weapon's gone.
Well, like I said, so far, since we've set no this is my bot thing yet.
Yeah, well, we're getting to see the regular season, so it's just the fun stuff.
And I throw an invite to all people, join in our conversation of this one, because I want to know which bots you think stand the best chance.
I'm excited to see more, especially because there is so many new robots. Biggest thing that I'm looking forward to seeing is Mammoth, the Yeet bot that kind of almost worked one time, but then it fought a really low to the ground robot and it stopped working. That's an idea and design where it's just this giant robot and it just kind of has a giant flipping scoop. And the whole idea is that it's so big that it can just yeet the other robot if it can scoop it up. If they had a better like shovel design for the, or like a scoop design for their flipper, they wouldn't have the issue that they had with so many of the low robots.
What was it? I was trying to think of like the most effective weapon against like any kind of metal or like robot thing. And all I could think of was like those shredders where you like throw anything into it and it just like chews it up.
That would take like a large amount of power though.
I mean, yeah, but like if you could try and figure out how to make a robot with like something like that on a small scale or like a smaller scale, and you could just like chew up a robot.
Megan, I have it. So we have a small dumpster on wheels that has little hands that like pick things up and put it into the top of its head.
Or you can have it like a garbage truck.
Yeah, like Mr. It'll be like
I'm imagining a killer Mr. Bucket.
Killer Mr. Bucket.
Oh, you try to throw the robot into itself and crush it. You throw it
in the top and it gets crushed in the little thing, and then you go, hey, you and don't have a robot. Yeah, you don't have a robot anymore.
Well, I mean, you could have like a bar to eject it once it's been squished.
No, it poops it out. It comes out the other end.
In small squares.
Okay, but the technicalities, most likely you won't
get it. Are we building wall?
Yes, I want to build a battle Wally. It could work though. So I'm thinking, okay, so aesthetically pooping it out the other side would be great, but what's actually going to happen when it throws it in, it's not going to get the whole robot. It's going to get like it's going to be in sideways and stuff, and you'll be able to crush like its wheel or its corner and stuff, and then you have to kajigger it so it doesn't just get stuck on top of you, or they're going to separate. So you could just have a spike. You have a spike that'll pop it up a little bit and hopefully it'll just jostle inside of it, and then you can crush it again. But yeah, we need battle bucket, and it'll just be a giant bucket that it just goes scoop.
Just like that's a miniature, the name of the robot. Like, just I'm thinking like kind of like a miniature hay baler where it just like
does that count?
What
if you had like a square, right? Yes. That was just like a steel square, and you somehow managed to get their battle bot in said square.
Yeah.
Like it's a little tractor pulley and it can't get out of there, right? So now it's stuck in this little like 4x4 square.
Yes.
Do you just win?
Rules state you can't hold someone for more than 5 seconds. However, if they got caught and you are not intentionally holding them, then it's totally fair.
Entanglement rules might be changed a little bit. That's the thing I want to see about Smee, because its entire deal is that it wraps around. It's so long, it snakes around the robot and then bites it with its spinner. So if it actually encloses upon itself and they can't escape, I'm wondering if he can just hold it like that or it has to release them after 5 seconds. That's also the excuse of why you have the spike, because you can't hold the robot. But if you throw it into yourself and you have a powerful crusher and you can actually like just bend and crush and crumple some of it, it's going to mess up its movement. Because even if you just bend it enough that one of the wheels doesn't hit the ground properly and it just drives like this, it's going to be easy to keep scooping them.
I mean, like
the battle bucket.
The robot that fought Bloodsport, like its main weapon got bent a little and then it didn't function.
Yeah.
And that scorpion?
Yeah. Because the buzzsaw
hit the ground and then
bent. And then it went like that. And it was a C, not an I. And they're like, oh, we can't spin the weapon anymore.
The biggest trick is getting it low to the ground enough, and the design that seems to work the most, it was one that was kind of infamous for Bite Force, and Bloodsport adopted it too, where it just has little wedgelets on a hinge, so they actually scrape along the ground, so they are the lowest and can get underneath. Because even like good plows, Bite Force has been able to get under, so that's what you need to incorporate with the scoop. So you need little fingers that have the little wedgelets on the end that hang there, so just like little nails, and just goes whoop.
Yeah, a little battle bucket.
Andrew, that's your homework for the week. Design battle bucket.
Okay.
Battle bucket.
I just imagine literally next week, because of how Andrew's got his camera and apartment set up, he's going to have like one of those big whiteboards, and he's like, smacks it. Okay, guys, this is what I got.
Because everyone's using spinners, and you know, we can only have so many vertical bar spinners. It is one of the most effective weapons, and that's cool and all, but I'm more excited by seeing different kinds of robots and the sort of upsets that you can get when you can just match up any robot with any interesting robot.
That's why
I agree.
That's why I really want to see Smee in another fight.
Yeah, I want to see it against something smaller and more suitable.
I honestly
like seeing like the random weird designs of like new kind of robots.
Isn't there the cat one?
Yeah, I was actually generally like, I was talking with Andrew about what robot he supports so far, and he said Rusty, and I'm like, you didn't pick the cat?
I picked Rusty.
I want to see Rusty go to the end. Isn't
Rusty
that...
might not even make it to the arena.
Rusty is the underdog story we've been all waiting to see. I want Rusty to go in with 3 wins by accident, because they keep setting up Rusty to be... Rusty is a scarecrow. Rusty is a glass Joe. Rusty was there to lose. Let's be honest. Rusty was
Have
there
you ever
to lose.
Seen, if you ever know WWE, right? This is like saying that Ric Flair is your pick for like going into wrestle now that he's like 86 years old, and oh, you yeah. know that like if the ring snaps the wrong way, his whole body's just gone.
Oh, do you want to know who I support for the championship bout? Ric Flair.
The Nature Boy.
I want Rusty to fluke his way to the championship, where he just happens to get behind them by accident each time, just bobbing along, and just goes...
I want him to, like, and I want the driver slash creator slash builder to keep the same amount of enthusiasm every single time, where he's just all like, huh.
Yes, I won.
Ooh.
I know, it's gonna be like, the next battle he goes into, it's gonna, like, pause when Rusty puts his little spike up, and all I hear is, oh my wa, shindiru. You just see little like Rusty kill the thing, and he's like, it just scoots away. this is the legacy of Rusty.
One of the other interesting non-returners this year, though, is Minotaur. Minotaur has been a consistently terrifying robot, and that's the one that, Megan, you've usually gone with, where it has the drum spinner that spins so fast, it sounds like a jet engine inside the arena.
Was it Fusion? Fusion did too this time. One of them had, like, a really loud...
I think it was Fusion that got really loud, but that's also why Fusion burst into flames.
Burst into flames.
I hope they have a whole second robot.
Yeah, that thing exploded. No.
I hope they have a method to like switch between weapons, because maybe that'll fix the problem where it's like just run one at a time.
They need to do what Bloodsport did. Bloodsport specifically paid attention to, okay, our weapon's been running too long. Get away, let it cool down. We'll then spin it back up and we'll hit them again. They were paying attention to make the hits count. Don't try to tombstone it, because Tombstone, his biggest issue is cockiness.
You know, what could be done for Fusion, though, is it's got two weapons, right?
Yeah.
So what you'd have is, like, an RF switch in the middle of it to, like, stop one weapon and send power to the other one where you need to.
Yeah, because you don't need to spin up both at the same time.
No. At least not the full speed. Spinning both is going to cause problems.
Not the full speed. Like, you need speed settings as well. So if you have, like, the back one, like, it's ready to go to spin up if you flip around quick, but you should really only be focusing on the weapon that's facing them.
Mm-hmm. So like your big main damaging one, and say like they wind up getting behind you in some way, shape or form, or they like grab you from behind. You just like hit the trigger, send the power all the way to like the other weapon, and just shoot that back up.
Do you guys feel bad for Captain Shredderator, Captain America Shield? He's like, oh,
Kyle has no sympathy because he's getting flashbacks of the bunk.
That shield went flying and it was like 6 pounds.
Yeah,
that's it,
man. That was the thing, is like his whole thing is like, you know, I've tried to rebuild this robot with new technology and stuff. Nope, back to 2003 when I used to win.
Nope,
robots got honestly too dangerous.
I feel like Captain Shredderator was like, it's an interesting and thoughtful design, but it just kind of flies around the ring like a frisbee. Like, if it gets hit, it's just like bouncing around. Yeah, it's literally Beyblade.
Well, that's the thing, is it's something that I never had thought about, that one of the drivers mentioned. Actually, Rusty mentioned it with BattleBots, where there are other robot fighting leagues, but most of them are much smaller with their arena. It's much more intimate, and there's a lot less places to run, so usually you're getting weapon on weapon quite intensely, quite quick. But the BattleBox is huge, and that's one thing where it changes the way those robots have to strategize, because some you may want to be right up against the corners, especially Flipper Bots. Their goal is to get you in the corner and flip you over the edge, but with a full body spinner or anything that has a lot of kinetic energy that is also going to throw your robot away once it hits, you want to stay to the middle, because if your bar spinner Tombstone starts going against the wall again, your robot breaks.
Didn't that happen one year where Tombstone's steel beam split?
They show that in the highlights all the time. It's one of the best things ever, because he's up on his side and it looks like he's breakdancing, hopping on the back of the robot with it up in the air with the one half of the bar spinner just going, and just like, well.
I do like that Tombstone's driver. You saw he was upset, but he's also a good sport. It's like, hey, sometimes they get the good hit in. What you gonna do?
When you've been a multi-time world champion and some new guy comes in, gives you the right hook, and you go down, you're like, respect.
They did a great setup for this fight, because they pointed out as well, 2 years ago when Endgame was a rookie, they called out Tombstone, we want to fight Tombstone, and they hadn't gotten that fight yet. So that being the first title bout, they talked about, we've been studying this robot for years now. We know how to fight it. We are going to approach it, we're going to pay attention to what way it is spinning, and we are going to approach it on its inside line. And that is exactly what he did. He took that first hit on the inside line, reduced the amount of damage he got, was able to get a hit in, hit him to the wall, then it was over.
They kept repeating that they had to get on the left-hand side because it was spinning clockwise, right?
Yeah.
So it would hit him and then send Tombstone himself into their robot so that their weapon can hit him.
I love the post-fight interview where they're actually talking with the guys, and for 5 seconds, just staring off, it's like...
The plan worked.
They're just so shocked.
Tombstone has gone up against a lot of robots designed similar to Endgame, where they have the front wedge and a vertical bar spinner. And every time, Tombstone has ripped off their wedge. But that's also because the way that you have to fight Tombstone is you have to take the first hit. You have to stop that bar while it is at a lower speed, because once it is spun up, you are dead. And they managed to approach Tombstone in a way that reduced the damage to their robot and got in the kill. Them also inventing the strategy to take down Tombstone might make it a less effective robot, because now if other robots of similar designs can replicate Endgame strategy,
then that's it for Tombstone.
You
might have
it changes the game.
I'm so excited to see what happens next. I do still want to see Tombstone rip some people apart, because
it's gonna happen.
It's always beautiful, because with other robots sometimes they just stop functioning. When you fight Tombstone, you just go poof.
If the shark robot goes up against Tombstone, it's going to be sashimi, it's...
Yeah. Oh, you got so upset, the Smee versus shark bot fight?
I was too. You didn't get to see...
Wait, why was I upset?
You were upset because the shark bot's driver partner died, and you're like, oh, come on!
Oh yeah, because it was sad, because the shark bot was like an old dude whose friend died before we could do this battle bot thing, and they're like, this is our last hurrah, I'm gonna do this for my buddy, and then you lost to a wet noodle.
That's one of the things with the first episode, because all the fights, because it's set up more like boxing in the regular season, they're all set up and stuff. That was one of those things where it felt like they were also trying to set up the shark robot, Sharkopolis. I forget the shark robot's name. They were trying to set it up for at least an easy win or an easy fight, because Smee, its entire thing is wrapping around. It's the only robot it can't wrap around, other than Mammoth, probably. But...
It ate away its tires slowly but surely.
It's the same thing with Rusty. Rusty, that fight felt like it was set up for Rusty to lose. Rusty felt like a give me, and... Rusty,
yeah, but the shark dude, old man's got to go home to his wife now and be like, so I lost in the prelims to a wet noodle.
So I hope Rusty goes up against the shark robot next. Another last hurrah, we'll finally get a win with the shark robot, and then Rusty wins by
accident. I swear to God, if the shark guy loses to Rusty, I can't anymore. That's too depressing to watch.
I don't believe that the shark guy would lose to the Rusty.
That old man's joining his friend.
Three
shark
wins.
Robot.
3 wins for
shark
Rusty.
Robot.
Top 16 Rusty.
That's going to be Andrew's new hashtag, 3 wins for Rusty.
top 16.
What's going to happen is the prelims, he's going to win the prelims, right? He's going to get into top 16, and he's going to show up with, like, this super sleek, like, chrome robot that's, like, decked to the nines, but still Rusty.
The new Rusty.
It turns out it's like, this is actual Rusty's true form. Like, Frieza just happened 6 forms later. Here we are. Here's Rusty.
No, it turns out, like, Rusty. The big dome actually houses the real Rusty, and he just peels out. It's like, ha-ha!
No, same Rusty. He just spray-painted him silver.
One red racing stripe down the middle. He's like, my bot goes 10% faster now.
That is science.
Painted flames on it.
Yeah.
Oh, he won't be able to be touched.
This is Doom Warrior Rusty.
I'm excited for this season. Like I said, BattleBots, it's a simple comfort, and, you know,
we need that.
It's the sport I love the most.
I'm trying to get the Eat Local staff in on the pool to see where they vote as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Good Lord.
Honestly, I don't know who I'm rooting for. I really don't know who to pick.
I'm going
to
wait until
I need the 16 announced right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool robots, and there's a lot of, like, obvious choices I could pick. So there's stuff like, it's like, oh, let's go with Endgame, or I can go with Hypershock again. Hypershock, I'll never forgive them for getting rid of the Rake. I don't care if drones aren't cool anymore. The most effective robot weapon I've ever seen was that Rake.
True.
The Rake.
We need to head to our first break here, folks, but keep that dial locked to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CILU is supported in part by the students of Lakehead University, our sponsors, and our listeners. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Copperfin Credit Union, Northwestern Ontario's largest locally owned credit union. Experience the convenience of their mobile banking app and online financial solutions anywhere, anytime. Copperfin Credit Union, life forward. Sarah Curtin, your neighborhood realtor. She's on top of what's happening in Thunder Bay's market, and she'll help you buy or sell your home. Call or text her anytime at 632-3635 or find her online at sarahcurtin.com. The Walleye, the definitive source for information on music, food, art, and entertainment in Thunder Bay. This month's issue is on stands for free now. Find it around town or online and interactive at thewalleye.ca.
And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca.
So you were pushing a show.
Oh, yeah, I kind of was.
It's more of a special.
More of a special. It's episode 2, technically. Of
3?
No, it's 2.
Yeah. 4? Is there 4 episodes?
There's going to be 4.
Yeah, 4. Because you were saying that I just want the last one.
I know.
That's all I want.
So Adventure Time with HBO Max commissioned 4 45-minute specials where they're just going to take place in the land of Ooh, and we're going to be able to follow some of our favorite characters from Adventure Time. BMO was a surprise, where BMO we thought was a sequel and it happened afterwards, and BMO turned out to happen all before he met Finn and Jake. Not the case with Obsidian here. So Obsidian, we're following Marceline and Princess Bubblegum and the Glass Kingdom. Next episode is the strangest one. It if I remember correctly, I think Peppermint Butler was turned into a baby at the end of it. The next story is Peppermint Butler. Peppermint Butler was her satanic warlock.
I was going to say, if the next one is about Peppermint Butler, there's going to hand in hand go with Death, because Death and Peppermint Butler are like...
It's called Wizard City. He has to learn how to do magic again because he's a student now. So that's where I'm like, I'm pretty sure Peppermint Butler was reincarnated and such. But yeah, that it's going to be the Wizards. So that means that Ice King will probably show up.
Okay.
Wait, no, it's not Ice King anymore. It's Simon. You're right.
See, Andrew, yeah, I need you to explain that to me, because I only seen a few episodes here and there. I know about like the basic lore of the show, and I know like the Ice King's past with Marceline.
Yes.
When the heck did he become human again? How?
Okay, that's right really at the end, and there was another character called Magic Man.
The
thing about... He turned a bird inside out.
I know that one.
So the thing about Adventure Time is, on its surface, it looks like just, you know, a random Saturday morning cartoon, and wacky things happen, and that's definitely how it started. As you dive more into Adventure Time and stuff, it turns out to be about a lot more high concepts and personal concepts. So not only working through things like depression and relationships and feelings and such, he also delves into more cosmic ideas of death, rebirth, reincarnation, alternate dimensions, and it gets a little weird here. So what had happened was Simon's wife?
Oh, like way back when?
Way back when. But there's too many characters for me to remember, but essentially what happens is gets pulled through time. And that's why she goes missing. That's why Simon was looking for her and such, and eventually put on the crown to become the Ice King and go crazy. She essentially stole Magic Man's powers, and then I believe it was the wish with Glob, but pretty much was able to get the crown off without Simon dying. I'm going to have to rewatch some of the show. Yeah, it got
he
really...
asked me, and I was like, I stopped. I'm not finishing that show. It's not happening.
The way it ends is we there's a lot of reincarnation and stuff. Do you remember the episode where it was set in kind of an alternate dimension? The animation was entirely different,
mm-hmm.
and it was in the farm world. Mm-hmm. That all becomes relevant. That's
okay.
That all ties in. That all happened. That's not non-canon. That
okay.
You got to remember they're just... stuff like the Miracle Owl.
Cosmic Owl?
The Cosmic Owl. Oh, what's the guy that's in the alternate dimension where he's just 2D and he just makes stuff happen and they have a hot tub?
I know who you're talking about.
You know who I'm talking about.
I can't remember. It's literally the shadow on the wall.
Yes.
Okay, so
when
I might
watch
stuff
like
show.
That, we can do reality warping. So to answer your question, Rob, reality was changed and magic exists.
So I'm pretty much, because a certain substance is now legal in Canada, I might
Prismo.
Yeah.
Watch this show because I feel Sober Mind was not meant for this.
Okay, at the start it was fine, mm-hmm. and then you see it progressively go more and more into like real life issues, someone mm-hmm. dropping 6 tabs of acid and continuing on with their time to figure out what was happening. Like I'll never forget them just like walking up to a bird's nest and mm-hmm. like whipping a nipple out and feeding a random bird.
The first season, it's going to be a lot of fun Saturday morning cartoon stuff, but that's also how Steven started and such, where you just had implications of a larger universe set in Ooh, where Ooh turns out to still be Earth. It is just an Earth very, 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 very far what? Into the future.
Gunter's a cosmic entity?
Yes.
Yes.
That makes my painting all the more better.
A Gunter is Orgalorg.
Orgalorg, the breaker of worlds.
Yes. Then there was Glob. Oh, so pretty much
Glob Grod.
That is the finale. He comes back, and then you're dealing with reincarnation.
Oh, the four-headed yes. ruby thing that spins.
Honestly, with some of these names, I feel like the guys were just like, they were really, really drunk.
No, they were not drunk, Rob. That's not... Rob,
me and Andrew's character. Rob.
Rob, did you ever see any of Midnight Gospel?
Yes.
Pendleton Ward's the one that animated Midnight Gospel, so...
Yes.
I couldn't watch it.
He had...
Why?
Because it's set at like... 5 frames per second for some reason, the entirety of the show.
Okay.
So it's like weirdly animated and it
It is oddly animated. It's more Midnight Gospel is a very different type of show where they took an existing podcast and then they kind of animated around it and sort of enhanced the ideas of his story of interviews. But Midnight Gospel is a lot looser than Adventure Time turns out to be, because one of the cool things about Adventure Time as a show as well is sometimes you would get an episode in the earlier seasons and then seasons later you would get an episode that happens rather right before or right after that recontextualizes what you saw in that episode. And then it also deals with depression, especially during those last couple seasons. And I understand it's probably, Kyle, you're going to have some trouble watching Finn be super. I mean, did you ever get up to Fern?
What was Fern?
Okay, so you remember how Finn had Grass Sword as a one arm? And then he also had the Finn Sword? So the Finn Sword was kind of...
Oh, this was his friend.
More than a grass friend. Also him. So Fern essentially was a combination of a crack in the reincarnated Finn Sword and his Grass Sword combining into a Finn that has all of Finn's memories, but he is essentially a grass entity. So it is Fern is Finn, but even more depressed.
Oh, no. Nice.
Because he is... All of his memories... are of Finn, and when he was first born, he thought Finn was the imposter. And Fern has to come to, you know, grips with the fact that he's not the person he thinks he is, but also he kind of is, because he's still Fern, but he's real sad. Fern is the saddest out of any Adventure Time.
Fern's story is similar to that of Anakin Skywalker from Star Wars Saga.
Not wrong.
That's what's in his cultural references section in the Wikipedia.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. Fern goes through some stuff, but you understand it. So I think you left Finn when he was just starting to get depressed. There are some happy times to be had, and we get to learn a lot about the humans that, you know, what happened to the humans, what humans are left, and... Yeah. What their civilization was. You get to learn about a little bit about the civilization on Mars, and then yes, the repeated destruction of the worlds as well as reincarnation.
See, I recognize the four-headed thing because that's when they go to Mars.
Yes.
Isn't that where Abraham Lincoln is?
Yes. Yes, it is.
But that's one thing that's really cool about Adventure Time is seeing it progress from, if you watch that pilot episode, that Adventure Time was a show that was never meant to be made. It started as a short that was on one of Cartoon Network's sort of like short blocks that they used to do, and they used to spin out a lot of their new shows from it. It didn't do well. It didn't get popular until its YouTube video, when they posted just that little short on there, blew up on the internet, and Cartoon Network went, oh, he actually has something here. We thought this was silly and stupid, and gave Pendleton Ward a show.
So
a lot of...
Because you've seen the show, when does Finn get the chest tattoo?
That's new.
Is that because Jake's dead?
Oh, yeah. He's a dog.
He's also magic.
No, he's a dog. That's the thing as well as they never show, like, point it out outright. But if you pay attention to Jake's character as it progresses, especially into the later seasons, you see him become older. So there'll be some times where he's just, and it's always passive, where he'll just be like slightly forgetful. But you see Jake start aging.
Oh, that's like, so sad.
Well, because I know he starts...
It's very passive.
He starts maturing in the sense that he gets his family, he has Lady Rainicorn, and he has, like, you know, starts growing up in that sense. But he's also the same one that will go hang out with the party god, Wolfhead thing in the Cloud Kingdom.
Yeah.
And get wrecked and come back.
Well, that's an issue they kind of dealt with Jake the Dog, that, you know, it starts out as a cute thing where Jake's girlfriend is a rainbow unicorn that speaks Korean, and they have puppies together, and they're cute little rainbow puppies, but they also are magic and have accelerated aging themselves, so they all become adults while Jake is still living more normal dog time.
One of the kids is with Finn in Obsidian.
Yes, and that's the thing. The implications on that, I think, is really cute, where Finn continues to adventure with Jake's family and just continues on with the next generation. So while Jake was more of a very much an older brother figure to Finn a lot of the times, Finn now gets to be sort of a mentor figure and a father figure to one of Jake's kids and brings them adventuring. Because I think she was the awkward, shy one as well, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
See, Kyle, you made a boo-boo. You shouldn't have gotten the tattoo, Adventure Time tattoo. You guys should have gotten Finn's chest piece.
Finn's chest piece. Okay, I think I stopped midway through, like, season six.
Season six, I think, was the roughest in when they started introducing a lot of the high-end concepts and stuff.
That's when Finn's dad started becoming more prevalent with, like, the Citadel.
Yes.
And stuff like, where he built the tower all the way up to heaven, but, like...
Isn't that where he loses his arm?
Got sassed by a cloud that's floating by, and...
And well, that's one of the themes that Adventure Time sort of passively deals with at first and then expands upon as it kept going as a show was the, and it even touches upon that in Obsidian where everyone's parents, good or bad, kind of mess them up. Because parents always try their best, but they're imperfect too. Well, not always try their best. Most parents try their best. And then you have parents like Finn with Martin. Or Martin, he's not just a deadbeat dad. He's also a bad person.
He's also apparently, he was in the list of deities.
I don't remember that, but I'll see. Martin has a redemption arc that is very long and kind of. So I don't want to spoil too much on that. Also because I partially don't remember all of Martin's arc. It's been a couple years since the show ended, and maybe a good time to go back through it with quarantine and stuff. But that was something that's kind of mirrored as well, where they dealt with Jake's, that one episode they had dealing with Jake. His kids kind of grew up into adulthood, where Jake still pals around, and then even his one of his sons bought their treehouse one time and started charging them rent just in an effort to force him to grow up.
Oh boy.
But also, I think I like about Adventure Time is some of the stuff that you couldn't do in cartoons when Adventure Time started, and they just had to leave to implications and such, is something that in 2020 they could fully embrace. And one of those big things is the relationship between Bubblegum and Marceline, where even from like the first time those two characters interacted, they'd always implied that they had had history and such, but they didn't elaborate it on first. But as they went more into the show, you realize that they used to have a relationship.
PB and Marceline have always been like fan favorites for shipping.
Yes.
And then Pendleton was just like, okay.
But well, that was one of the things as well, is they also recognized is, well, actually these two characters do have chemistry. Like, we didn't really intend it and stuff, but like the way they play off of each other, and we've left their backstory vague enough where it's like, you know, that's something that works. And that's something that I like about PB and Marceline's relationship, because that's the one of the big focuses of this Obsidian special, is about them living as a married couple, and not just, you know, a newly married couple. Like, they've been together for years. And watching them, how they explore the tension in their relationship now compared to when they were younger. So, like, the crux of the Obsidian special, I really like the way they open it, where they tell, like, the tale of Marceline the Vampire Queen, where she played her holy song and it banished the dragon back into the furnace where it slumbers. And every year, the glass people get together to sing Marceline's song to keep the dragon asleep.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the issues is, since the dragon was trapped inside of their furnace, the glass people could no longer repair themselves. And that's something that, you know, they tell stories about, where before, when they had cracks, they could go to the furnace and get repaired, but no one can get repaired anymore. And Glass Boy is always teased and made fun of because he has a huge crack.
The Glass Boy's name really confuses me, because that would be like calling Chris Human Boy.
Finn's literally called Finn the Human Boy.
Yeah,
literally.
And Jake the Dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Princess Bubblegum.
Flame Princess. I was Glass Princess.
I always thought those were titles, not
names. No, that's their name.
That's their names.
Oh.
Yeah, Death is just called Death. Lich is the Lich.
What Death? Death is always Death.
Finn the Human.
Cinnamon Roll.
Cinnamon Roll.
Butler.
Peppermint Butler. He is a Peppermint Butler.
Little walking Peppermint Butler.
Okay, so they don't waste too many thoughts on names.
Nope. The only ones who have like names are like Prismo.
Marceline.
Marcy.
Marceline the Vampire Queen. Like, she's named also because it rhymes.
Yes. Simon.
I'll accept rhyming names.
Crunchy? What's his name?
I don't know who Crunchy is.
There's the little guy that's in the Candy Kingdom, and he's all grumpy, and I think he has a broom. He's got a little mustache.
Oh, yes.
You know who I'm talking about. He has a name.
He's the little janitor one?
I know.
No. Don't squeeze me, I'll fart.
He's like prevalent in the little zombie episode. Yeah, the zombie episode.
Most of them
is
are.
Is
named...
his name like Scruffy or Sweepy or something?
No, Scruffy is it.
That's Futurama.
Scruffy's the one from Futurama.
Yeah, Scruffy's.
Scruffy Janitor.
I think he's based on that. Like he has to be based on Scruffy from Futurama because it's the same character just in like a chocolate ball.
Chocolate ball.
So I laughed really hard during the like in the Obsidian.
Yeah.
Where PB shoots out jelly beans.
And it farts.
And she like farts out jelly beans and she looks over. She's like, it's not gross. It's jelly beans. I was like, if someone came over and just made noises as they shot stuff out, I'd be like, did you just poop on them?
Are you the Easter Bunny?
That's what I really liked is the way this situation sets up the tension in Marceline and Bubblegum's relationship, because they were together at the end of Adventure Time and they stayed together and they, you know, had continued to be a couple and such, and seeing specifically just the peril to the last time they had been to the Glass Kingdom to go put the giant dragon lizard to sleep.
I don't know what it is, because it like comes out of the cave as like a blob and reforms into like a flame lizard.
Well,
but, as you were stating,
it was grow to the environment around you. He grew up in a volcano, so he became a volcano creature.
And like as you were saying, like Marcy and PB's relationship is drastically different because it's like the big focus on Marcy's not angry anymore.
Yes. Well,
she's not the like punk rock girl. She has like she's Bonnie, which she loves entirely. She like doesn't care much anymore. Like she went to her most painful spot, which I thought was a little, I guess she got abandonment sucks, sure. But
well, and that's part of the big thing here. One of the things that I liked is you learn the backstory because they tell this big legend of Marceline, you know, putting the dragon to sleep. But as we explore what actually happened when they went there, is that it was Princess Bubblegum that had responded, and Marcy had just tagged along, was actually bugging Bubblegum, and saying, oh, these people don't matter. They're glass, they break. PB was super invested in trying to impress them when she came back this time and such. That was one thing where they'd both matured, which she could admit it, where I'm like, I was kind of jealous that, you know, they don't see me and recognize all the effort I put in and how smart I am, and they worship you, and Marcy didn't even care about them when she had wrote the song that had you know, pretty much scared the dragon back into the cave, where it was more like, oh, I don't want any part of this.
Yeah, the dragon was just like, this is awkward. I don't want to deal with this.
Well, isn't that how you, like, stop things from happening? You just awkward the situation up?
Leave. That's what I do. I go, like, fight somebody as a dragon, and they're just, like, having a marital argument in front of me. I'd just be like, nah.
You're not going to pinky in the brain and just Leroy Jenkins?
I'm just going
to... Larvo is the dragon.
Larvo. The cat butterfly.
Well, we'll get to that, because, I mean, that's part of, like, the big theme here. I also like that we got a lot of Marceline's backstory that we had never had before, because we had seen some of the stuff, but not really ever the very beginning. Yeah, because we had known that she had a mom at one point that she had traveled with. We also know that... You know, eventually she's on her own and she meets up with Simon and such. But prior to that, you get to see the sort of relationship with her mother and stuff and how much her mom would just shield her from how horrific the world was.
Because her mom was dying, right?
Like, yes.
That's what they were establishing. But taking a child to a base filled with skeletons.
I need one of you two to explain. With the werewolf thing or the what-up wolf?
The what-up wolf?
Marceline does something. I thought she just ate red.
She sucks souls. She's a vampire.
Yeah. Okay, well, everything I ever saw of her, she just eats red.
Her dad is a big vampire thing, and so he's the one that comes and, like,
king
sucks
of the underworld.
Yeah, he's kind of the king of the underworld, so they can do that whole stuff, but, like, she doesn't like doing that. She doesn't want to hurt people.
Eating red is, like, the way she's a vegetarian vamp, mm-hmm. But what she actually, you know, craves is souls and darkness.
Souls!
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's one thing that I also liked as well, is that they showed that Marceline's mom was terrified of her, but tried to always hide how scared she was. And but
how depressing was that what up dog when its mom died, just went and sat beside it, laid down. I was like, God, don't do this.
Again, and they carry the theme as well throughout this, that our parents and our relationships with them affect how our relationships with people are today.
Yeah.
And they show that in just so many different facets. One of them being is that scary. So Rob, what had happened when you see Marceline in the beginning, because this was thousands of years ago, is that is pretty much fresh off the nuclear apocalypse, and the entire entire planet is sort of irradiated, and that's how Ubi comes to be, is just whole lot of radiation.
Nuclear wasteland.
See, that part I know. I know about, like, how it's technically a post-apocalyptic story.
There's a chunk of Earth missing.
Yes. Like I said, I don't know much episodically, but I do know the lore.
Yeah. So seeing that, like, you know, what up, Wolf, was just saying hi and lost its mom because it said hi to these weird creatures.
And you know, Marcy was just doing what she needed to do.
Oh, she was protecting her mom, so she turned into this giant monster. I like how she sort of, you know, so the big thing is that she returns to the Glass Kingdom with Bubblegum. They plays the actual song. She's like, no, that's not my song. It's, you know, you guys have been singing my song all wrong. So she plays her actual, you know, breakup song with Bubblegum, and it just makes Larvo angrier, more sassier. And you get to see, like, the tension for the first time between them, where they're... Well, first time in a while between them, where she's like, were you expecting me to fail? And she's like, I didn't know why your song worked. I'm prepared either way. And yeah, I kind of wanted to show them how great I was.
Yeah, okay. But the Glass Kingdom people.
Yes.
They all suck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, I can't think of a single one besides Glass Boy.
Yes, but we do learn why.
Because they're all broken inside.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Again, their metaphors... That's one thing that I like. Their metaphors can be deep, but they're also accessible to children as well. Where, yeah, the glass people, the reason they bullied Glass Boy, whereas Crack was showing, is because they were all cracked as well. And they lay it out on Front Street is, I was judging you because I was afraid of being judged for the same thing. And that's something that you see a lot within society, where people will attack those that they see with their own insecurities.
Hey, you have code nipples. Get out of here. I'm going to fight you.
The Ripple Nipple People forever! We are the Ring Nipple People.
Ring Nipple People.
Oh, I haven't had a ring in my nipple for a few years.
Good lord. Okay, so first off, why did they drive a motorcycle there?
Because it looks cool.
It looks cool.
Cool. Flight.
Yeah. No. Why not?
They also endangered Glass Boy by putting bubble wrap on his head and taping him to the back of a motorcycle.
Oh, he's good. He's wrapped. They packed him well. He's good. He's good. Also, like, Glass Boy, they also don't understand the urgency of what's going on right now, because this random Glass Boy has come up. No, they just travel by. It's romantic to travel by motorcycle.
It is.
I would rather travel by flight or flying magic swan.
And that could also be a compromise between Marceline and Bubblegum, as Marceline likes to travel by motorcycle. It reminds her of her mom, because the last thing her mom was doing was fixing up a motorbike.
It was kind of cool to see them, like, swap back and forth and not just have Marceline as the driver the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they, like, swap back and forth. The take and pull in their relationship now.
Yeah. Both of them are a part of it. Because even, like, back home, when you see them just, like, hanging out at home, Peavy's like, show me the song that you're making. Sitting there all excited, and Marceline's just like,
I'm an artist.
You
can't understand my work. And yeah, I knew that was the one that I loved that moment in the special where her song doesn't work. It's like, no, I need an angrier song. I just get in touch with myself. Last day you took my brush, didn't really care, because they're an old married couple now. Like, the things they don't even fight about. Those were the days. But Marceline becomes convinced that she needs to get in touch with her, like, her inner punk child again, be able to express it. That's where you get to see a lot of the backstory with Marceline and her mom, and you get to see those issues that she deals with, where her mom would shield her from emotions and stuff, and has to come with terms. It's like, well, I kind of still do that now myself, where I push people away because I don't know how to deal, but that's my fault, not yours. But specifically, Glass Boy's song.
Which one is See Right Through You?
Yeah. See Right Through You.
Yeah, See Through You.
Where Glass Boy gets in touch with his inner punk rock and he expresses his pain through music.
We all had a punk rock phase.
On a guitar made of a tissue box, some crayons, which, by the way, Marceline tunes later on.
And sounds well.
Yeah.
Which bothers me when she starts turning it, it makes different sounds, and I was like, what are you tuning? It's a crayon!
While Marceline was in the bunker as a child, her first guitar was very similar. So they actually set it up. That's where Marceline learned to play music, was on a string box guitar.
That was her same guitar from the bunker.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that Bubble Boy, but she, like, takes it later.
You can make those. They don't sound as good
with a crayon.
No, Kyle, you can make that. I swear you can make it. I have seen it made with the tissue box.
You can make it, but you can't tune it like a regular guitar by turning the crayon.
And it's not going to sound that good.
Well, it sounded more like a ukulele, which, I mean, maybe you can.
You know what happens when you're going to try to tune that? You're going to turn the crayon. The crayon's going to get tighter. The crayon's going to snap in half because it's a crayon. It's not.
But it's
more. She could have used a bone.
Marceline, no, that's that. I mean, maybe eventually she gets to that. She gets to being hardcore and stuff. But I mean, you got to start with the tissue box. But her reaction to the Glass Boys song, where she realizes like, oh, then she's actually looking at herself like a literal reflection of herself as a teenager, going, that's what I sound like. Like, she's
actually what I sound like. Maybe not.
I'm so obnoxious.
That's literally all of us looking back at like our 15-year-old covered in black with chains on our pants.
Hello!
Hold
on. I always said this during high school, and I'll even say it now. I was the most cheerful goth you'll ever meet.
I can believe that.
It's because you're getting some.
Yup! God, I missed that!
High school was great.
Since when?
Always. I loved it. It was the greatest time of my life. It's all been downhill from there. What else was there for Obsidian?
Well, I mean, they're just really the climax of stuff. Marceline, you know, returns to the Glass Kingdom just to go support Bonnie, saying, like, I'm sorry, I left.
Oh, Bonnie's- there's also PB's strategy of, like, dumping the root beer on the lizard.
Well, trying to crystallize backfires. The lizard. Yeah, and just
yeah, which backfires and just gives it armor.
So I said this when I was watching this with Megan. The crystallized dragon thing looks like a really cool Pokemon.
It looked pretty cool. Like, once it broke out, it was just like, yeah, so I'm crystallized armored now. And I was like, all right.
Yeah, you take the end boss and you make them even more terrifying.
Yeah, you did it, PB. You made it so... Nope. Yeah, just made things worse.
Also, now that I know is Peanut Butter's MO.
You get to see Glass Boy be the hero as well, where he realizes, like, oh, Larvo just is mad at me. So Glass Boy runs back into the furnace, gets Larvo to chase him. You know, Bonnie and Marceline chase, and they have the cave collapse in on them because the mean glass people, you know, turned the... I love the little joke they have in there. It's like, why did I make a full blast setting on my force field?
Yeah, he was like, why did I even put a full blast setting on there? You know what? For mental notes for future.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that in the future.
I swear I know the female glass, like the mean one, her voice. I know her from... Gonna Google this later, but...
You know what? I recognized one of them.
Oh, yeah?
We got Google pulling a Megan here. It's like, hold on.
So Glass Boy is obviously the same actress that did Amethyst from Steven Universe. And, who's Cleveland's son? What's his name?
Rollo?
Family Guy?
Cleveland Jr.?
Cleveland Jr. Okay, one of the mean glass people is Cleveland Jr. Those are the only two voices that I really recognized.
Damn.
Everyone else was kind of like, I don't know. Like, they were just voice people.
What?
Yeah.
Larvo had a voice?
Technically, yeah, he made sounds.
Yeah.
And the, it was by Klaus from American Dad, so D. Bradley Baker.
I mean, you still what get paid. That? I wonder if you get paid.
What were they called?
I don't know. I don't know what the glass people were called. They were minor
characters. Yeah, I don't remember their names.
You're close, Megan.
Amethyst.
It wasn't Amethyst, it was Peridot.
It says Amethyst.
Oh, right. Why are they showing a picture of Peridot right beside her?
Because it's the same voice.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Simon Petrick. Yeah, okay, so SpongeBob's Ice King.
That one I knew.
Is Limestone one of them?
Maybe. That sounds
is that
like
Johnny
a glass.
Bravo.
That makes sense.
Yeah, okay. One of them was Johnny Bravo.
All right.
All right, we're getting somewhere with that. See-through princess?
That was the actual princess.
Yeah, see-through princess, because you can see through her. I like as well see-through princess's moment where she kind of gets sort of like her own autonomy and like sense of confidence by literally getting cracked in half and then having pants.
They even mention
she's got
it.
Pants now.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, she's got pants now.
The background guy's like, oh,
like, what?
But they keep that theme of like loss and environment shaping who you are, because as the cave collapses in on Marceline and Bubblegum, and you know they're worried about, you know, Larvo, you know, about to escape and probably going to destroy them all, plays her new song, and it's a love song to Bonabelle, talking about how she's her weakness and how she likes that, and she gets to feel soft and warm when she's with PB. And you get to see through that song, you get to see Larvo's backstory, where for him, he was just this little sea creature that got attacked by a huge monster, cracked himself, chased away to his family, and just grew up alone inside of this furnace to become this fire monster filled with anger and loneliness, which then makes him burst through as a big shining cat glittery squirrel
butterfly. It was a cat butterfly.
It was catterfy.
It was beautiful.
The end of that is quintessential Adventure Time and such, where it was silly and ridiculous. Blah! It was just so friggin' cute.
Very cute.
I was like, aw, they all have a mushy center. And PB's like, let's kill it. No.
That was my favorite part.
Like I was saying in the beginning there, it's really cool to see of, you couldn't even show a lesbian relationship in a cartoon, let alone one that started off as a Saturday morning children's cartoon back when Adventure Time started. And now you can center an entire special around it because we've come forward culturally enough that, you know, networks are no longer sort of holding back these stories. They're letting other types of stories be told, and being invested in these characters for, you know, so many years, you get a real reward off of seeing them grow, as well as seeing the reflection as well, or just within relationships in general, and being able to sort of just help process that, where, you know, we all have our own issues, we all have our own baggage, and all of us have an impact from, you know, our parents. As you mature and older, you just learn to mellow out with a lot of that stuff as well, and just learn to cope and be and exist.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Rob, if you want to pick up Adventure Time, I highly recommend it. You will likely enjoy it and stuff. You're going to... But then, yeah, we talked a little bit about like Jake at the end there, where... Jake and Finn at the end there. I liked seeing that as well, where a small detail about Finn, no robot arm. He's just accepted himself.
He just didn't have an arm.
Yeah, no, that's just who he is. He's just a guy that had his arm chopped off, and that's okay. He doesn't need a fake grass arm.
Actually, I enjoy this. YouTuber I watch, we actually interviewed him once, the Dom, talks about in one of his newest episodes that disabilities in a lot of media are portrayed as being broken or something that needs to be fixed. Yeah. And it's never just part of you. So seeing Finn just as is, it's not a bad thing. It's just who he is.
It's one of those ways that Adventure Time figures out how to carry through the themes within it through everything, because that's also the theme of the glass people and such, where all of them are broken in different ways and stuff, and that's just what makes them unique. It's not that they're wrong that they're broken. It's just that that's life.
Life.
And the scars you come through with life each have a story.
Well, like Finn came out at the end there, like the older version. You could tell like right off the bat he's not the same.
Oh yeah.
He didn't kick the door open and jump out with his like 6 foot long head of hair blowing in the wind, sword ready to go. He just like opened up. He's like, you good?
You see he's a lot more at peace now.
You got monster troubles, PB?
And now he adventures with Jake's, you know, shy, nerdy daughter, and also seeing her now, like,
she has
way more confidence as well now. So, like, that's where I sort of imagine they would have a mentor relationship very similar to what Finn and Jake had.
So that the kid is Bromwyn? That's apparently the child's name.
Oh, speaking of the child.
Oh, my God.
We need to head to our last break here, folks, but keep that dial locked to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk in Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. The Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
And And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILQ, or around the world at luradio.ca. Okay, no, but I mean, it's been a week. We could talk about spoilers and stuff. They finally named Baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda.
One thing that a lot of people are excited for, I was excited for too, because I was a big fan of Clone Wars and Rebels. Eventually, both of those shows, their first season, if you ever go to watch them, first season is rough because they both have to start out as a Saturday morning children's cartoon, and it's not until they're a season or two in that they start getting to explore more Star Warsian things. But if you stick through it, especially with the character of Ahsoka, it's worth it. And
yeah, she went from most hated to most loved.
She was George Lucas's worst idea.
I swear, hear that name one more time,
Ahsoka Tano.
It's been like 2 weeks now of the internet just being like, "Have you talked about our Lord and Savior, Ahsoka Tano?"
Well,
do you know Ahsoka Tano's lore? I was like, no.
Here's the important thing about Ahsoka Tano. She's
got slugs on her head.
So to understand why so many people love her as a character is, even though she started off as something terrible, she was Anakin's apprentice. We're like, Anakin didn't have an apprentice. This is stupid. And that Clone Wars movie, the animated one, was really, really bad. They were very new at animating. It was very much a TV budget animation put onto the big screen. And even just the techniques and way they animated. I remember specifically, there was a scene in that Clone Wars movie where Obi-Wan Kenobi just walks over onto the ship and gets in. He's like, you know, we didn't need to see how awkward your walk animation is. You can just hard cut to Kenobi in the ship and we're cool with that. Don't show us how bad your animation is.
No, you gotta watch him walk the entire way.
Through Ahsoka Tano's character, it retroactively fixes Anakin's fall to the dark side, because in Revenge of the Sith, it seems like it just happens on a dime, because the last time we saw him in Clone Wars, and we just see, you know, Anakin going from this happy, you know, go lucky sort of guy, I'm in love with you, Padme, to, I'm now killing children and I hate the Jedi Council.
The Youngling Slayer 2000.
Ahsoka kind of fixes that retroactively, and why he distrusts the Jedi Council, because what happens with Ahsoka is she is framed for murder, and the Jedi Council end up exiling her from the Council and finding her guilty. And immediately after, Anakin, you know, finds the evidence, like, no, Ahsoka didn't do this. She was set up. And they invite her to come back, and Ahsoka's like, no, I don't want to be a part of you. And she leaves. And that's where Anakin's first big loss sort of comes in here. It creates that rift between Anakin and the Jedi Council, where it's much more understandable now why he stepped away from them to go join the Emperor. As well as you sort of learned in Rebels, Ahsoka Tano, after she had, you know, left Anakin, plants the seeds to start the rebellion. So she was going by the name of Fulcrum. She was pretty much a covert ops, communicating and helping connect networks of, sort of small pockets of rebellions on distant worlds into growing into what would be the rebellion. So having her being able to introduce us to what the child's name is and getting to communicate it for the first time, because it makes sense. Because you don't really think about it as Yoda has a hard time speaking. So the idea that Yoda's species is actually very nonverbal and communicates just through the Force is interesting. And Ahsoka is the only one that can speak with him. So we finally learned his name, and it's Grogu.
So I want to say two real things quick. First off, that was perfect casting with Rosario Dawson. Yeah. She looked, sounded, and acted perfectly like Ahsoka.
She put in the work.
Why does he have the worst name I've ever heard?
I like it. In a fantasy setting. You were just attached to Baby Yoda. Grogu is a fantastic name, and it sort of fits with being a two-syllable name, and that's something that has been consistent for the few members of Yoda species that we know of. Yoda and Grobro. Yoda, Yaddle, and Grogu.
Yeah, Yodel, Yaddle, and Grobro.
Megan, what do you think of Grogu?
Yoda, yeah.
I don't know. You were saying that, like, Yoda had a hard time communicating,
mm-hmm.
that their species, like, it would make sense for them to communicate through the Force, but, like, also, Grogu is, like, also just, like, still considered, like, an infant in their species. So it would make sense that they could probably communicate with, like, their mind, because infants and, like, children, very young children, before they start speaking, they still have, like, thoughts, I guess, of, like, what they want to communicate, but they don't know how, because they just don't know how to talk.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually they might, you know, actually speak, like, you know, like a... as the way with children do. They've learned to eventually speak language. But yeah, I don't believe that Grogu like will have a hard time communicating. It's just like right now, since they're still so young, them communicating through the Force is a good idea.
Well, I mean, well, the thing is, if you think like Yoda's speech pattern was out of order, and it was something that was just sort of like made him different and quirky and such. But I think that also plays back into it, like that. I think their species processes language differently, and that's why Yoda, despite being able to speak perfect English, like all of his words individually were like whole, but they were in a different order. And it's like also kind of like an implication where like different languages, even among humans, we change where like pronouns and predicates and such are. I think Yaddle speaks in the comic. I'll have to check, but yeah. The comics are no longer technically canon, or maybe they're canon. They're in a bit, anything from Legends is in a big gray area, and they're just slowly pulling stuff into being canon.
I think there was a Yoda species on the Jedi Council in the Republic?
Yeah, Yaddle. No, Knights of the Old Republic? The internet has been very adamant there's only three.
So I have to quickly explain something for Kyle, because he's, you know, looking at Star Wars wiki stuff.
Yeah.
And he's seeing the Star Wars Shakespeare. We sold these dispensers when I worked there, the entire story of Star Wars, but written as though Shakespeare would have written it.
I hate that.
I'm looking at this, and it's like, William Shakespeare's The Phantom Menace, The Phantom Menace, Star Wars, Part the First, Part the Second, From the Clone Army Attacketh, Tragedy of the Sith Revenge, Star Wars, Part the Third, The Empire Striketh Back, and The Jedi Doth Return.
I hate that whole sentence.
They weren't good. It's literally just the entire script reread with a lot of dots and verilies and fortune.
I did find him. This Jedi, he's one of the characters in the Dantooine like Jedi Council.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also like a Yoda character species.
Oh.
Yeah, so his name was Vandar.
Still two
syllables.
Vandar! I'll have to check into it. No one's brought him up yet, so you might have actually discovered
that character's that, not even on the wiki.
A lot of people might be overlooking that, so that's interesting. Also, with the wiki, you might have to, if you're looking at Wikipedia, you might have to change between canon and legends, because there is now...
StarWars.fandom.com.
No, you're under the canon section. You gotta go legends.
It's on the Wikipedia.
That's something
that happened. He's legends, yeah. It says legends.
So we don't know if they're canon or not. Probably not. I told you that there's been more and more references kind of coming in for Revan. So
what is this walking turd in a cloak that you found?
Is it the same as Yoda species, or is it a different species?
Oh, it's definitely the same as Yoda species, except it's brown, it looks like a prune, and has like a blue robe on.
But it's the same species.
That's really cool. I'll have to look into that more, because that's something that I think a lot of the internet is overlooking right now. And
I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
The more that I learn about Star Wars, the like more I dislike it.
Kyle.
Like, you just introduced me to Yaddle, who has this like 1970s majestic like Knight Rider set of hair on a Yoda.
Yaddle dies before episode 2. So Yaddle goes away.
I'm super glad that Yaddle died.
Kyle, World of Warcraft lore.
Yeah, that's fine. It makes sense. This sucks.
No, okay. So here's the thing is a lot of stuff in Star Wars, especially like, I understand why Disney wrote a lot of it out of canon, because some of it was kind of rough. So they're taking the better ideas of the ideas that have been percolating within like the comic books and the novels and the video games for a while, and bringing forward some of the things that were like cooler, and then also tweaking things to, you know, some of the ideas they didn't like, kind of writing those out of canon. Megan, because I know you love Knights of the Old Republic, there wasn't a direct reference to Revan in Rise of Skywalker, as terrible as it was, but in like the supplemental information, the different sections of Sidious's cult were named after former Sith, and one of them was Revan. But there was a more direct one more recently in Darth Vader's comic, where he's on his kind of volcano planet. I'm trying to remember.
Mustafar,
thank you. His entire castle is just filled with noxious fumes and stuff, but Vader doesn't care. He doesn't breathe real air. He has a giant breathing apparatus. So one of the officers comes in to talk with him. He's like, hey, we need to have respirators in here. Like, people keep dying and going crazy and stuff because they're huffing sulfur all day. he's like, no. And you watch him, and he might be tripping out, but you can't really tell. In the smoke, you see the silhouette of Revan. Like, you see his mask appear in the smoke. So it's not him directly, but you're seeing still more references to Revan.
I love it. I love it so much. Revan is just, like, honestly, the character design itself is so good. Like, that mask and just the robes and everything is just, like,
Did you ever see the fan art of Keanu Reeves as Revan?
I have, and I'm all for it.
Is it the poster above her bed?
And that might be some of the stuff that they pull forward and such, because Tython, where they went to in the most recent episode, because Ahsoka pretty much, I love the moment that Ahsoka sort of has, because one of the big things that, you know, she carries the baggage of is she knows what happened to Anakin Skywalker. He didn't die on Mustafar. He became Darth Vader. And
he got super asthma. When
she, you know, starts testing Grogu and just to see how his relationship with the Force is, she sees attachment to Din Djarin, and she sees fear and anger, and she's like, I'm not training this child. I want his powers to fade because I have seen what those emotions do to the best of us. And you see her essentially having to reflect upon her master, Anakin, her best friend, and the person she looked up to like more than anyone because of those emotions with Jedi training, fall to the dark side and become a galactic terror.
Have you seen the fan comic that someone made about Luke meeting Ahsoka?
Oh yeah, I saw that. It was so sad.
I haven't seen that.
One page. And look this up. It's a single page comic, but it does so much emotions in a page that it's kind of shocking. And I want this person to be a professional writer, where pretty much the entire story is Luke meets Ahsoka, and Ahsoka's like, oh, I wish you could have met your father. And he's like, I did at the end. And she just starts crying. She's like, he came back? One page. Oh, and like, oh.
One thing is that I liked as well with Ahsoka is that in that episode as well, the entire time, like, it's kind of, you're assuming that they're just looking for, Moff Gideon, our guy with the, kind of has a Vader suit on the front, but he just has the darksaber, and he's the one that's been chasing Grogu. She pretty much has the Duchess, lightsaber to the throat, and then she says the name. Where is
the name you love?
Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Okay, hold on. I have a question.
Okay.
As I'm reading the biography and all this jazz, yes, of Baby Yoda.
Grogu.
He's been in the series since Anakin went nuts.
Yes. Yes.
And 100%. Nobody's mentioned him. Not a single other thing in the entirety of the last 30 years has mentioned this random child.
Because he was just a youngling, everyone assumed dead.
Yeah.
But he was being trained by masters in the Jedi Temple.
So were a lot of kids, and Anakin killed them.
But yes, this isn't a regular child. It's a small Yoda, which is apparently super mythical and rare and valuable, but has been existent in the temple in front of everybody.
Okay, so here's what we know about Grogu. So yes, Grogu was a youngling back... So he's 50 years old. He was a youngling in the Jedi Temple. And you got to think of how, as Megan pointed out, infantile he still is. Where I think in the more recent episode, he actually seems more like probably 3 or 4. He's still very, very young, but he does have more intelligence than we sort of thought at first, where he's not just a baby. He just wasn't being called by his name. So he was being kind of a brat, where he's like, you know, no one's actually talking to me, so I'm going to go. But when
he's a several master trained Jedi master by the time he leaves this temple.
No, he never left the temple. That's the thing, is he's 50 now, so you got to think that he likely was in the temple then, but he was newborn probably level, and the only training he would have would just be like working through the Force. That's what it's like, I'm guessing,
by several people.
Jedi is basically, they rotate out the masters, so no one forms attachment at that age.
Yes, you do not.
I think this is dumb.
No, Kyle, you start out as a youngling. The younglings are just in the Jedi Academy, and they might flunk out. They don't necessarily graduate to being a Padawan. They don't actually get to go do things in adventure and, you know, get to use a real lightsaber that's beyond a training lightsaber until they've completed the Jedi Academy, and they get to graduate into being a Padawan and having a master and being trained.
You know how this could have been solved? Mentioning that another one of Yoda's race is living inside the Jedi Temple at any point in the last 30 years?
That's the thing, is its species is likely so underdeveloped that we would have no reason to see it. We never saw much of the Jedi Temple and the younglings. Like, there's only a couple we ever really see. So we see the ones that literally...
Everyone made a big deal about, like, this being one of Yoda's race things is showing up in the show, so he's been in the series for 30 years.
Well, there's a difference between the fan reaction and the in-universe thing. The fan reaction's excited because there's been so few of Yoda species, and actually, what Yoda species is and the history behind it is one of the very few things that George Lucas has never actually laid out. He has an answer to that, but he specifically chose not to touch upon that. Like, that's like, that was an aside story, so this is the first time in any Legends, or because Star Wars has been around for decades, so with all of that legend stuff, they never touched on what Yoda species were, what their home planet was, what their development is like. The only species that we had ever known were ones that were already several hundred years old, because Yoda dies when he's 100, so we got to think about this.
900,
which is even longer here, so you have to think of how long of a time span this species has. So Grogu, because most younglings are taking under 3, I believe. They are taking very, very young.
Before they can form attachments.
Bingo. So yeah, so like we're talking 2 or 3. So they're taken as literal newborns. So as far as we know, that's essentially the state that Grogu is in. He's probably in a nursery of some sort. And
he was born at the same time as Anakin?
Yeah. No.
It still doesn't make sense to me why everybody was excited that this little turd showed up when apparently he's existed. Because
we've
universe.
Never seen a baby. We've never seen a baby.
But he was at the temple.
We've never seen the nursery.
Why did nobody just go, hey, it's a little Yoda?
You don't get to walk around the temple. Kyle, I can give you all of the shots we have ever seen of the temple and stuff. For all you know, you don't know what happened inside of the temple because we've only seen very few things of the younglings. We have seen Yoda training them in Attack of the Clones. We saw Anakin slaughter them in Revenge of the Sith. And then we got a couple episodes of a group of older younglings going to get the Kyber crystals for their first lightsabers. That is all we have of younglings. We have seen so little of the younglings and the Jedi Temple and such. You can't say that, oh, we never knew, blah, blah, blah. And also, no one's going to go around praising a random child within the Jedi Temple, because that's literally against the sort of thing of pride and building them up like that. They're supposed to be more monk-like. You don't want to make them arrogant.
That's one of the reasons they never want to tell Anakin he might be the chosen one, because he was already arrogant as is. You tell him that, and he's like, oh, yeah.
Megan, what were you saying?
When we were talking about the location of the Jedi Enclave, the Jedi Temple, I just remembered that it's a different location for the Jedi Enclave in Knights of the Republic, because you can walk around in it and explore it and go see all the different rooms and stuff, and there are younglings around.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, Old Republic's different. I meant in the time of the movies in, on Coruscant and such. Though Tython actually comes from Legends as well. I think it came from the Old Republic, but it actually has a long history within it, where Tython is, at least in Legends, supposed to be the first homeworld of the Jedi, and that was kind of where their first temple was, and that's where Baby Yoda goes to, or Grogu.
Grogu.
How does the calendar work?
Very confusingly, just roll with it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to figure out the timeline here, because he was born in 41 BBY.
Before the Battle of Yavin.
And then...
So the Battle of Yavin, I believe...
Rescued in the Siege of the Temple at 19 BBY.
Yes.
So he's like 40 years old at this point when he's rescued.
He's 50. Oh, so you didn't know that. Grogu is 50 years old right now in Mandalorian. So that's what I'm trying to explain, where when he was a youngling, and you think of how infantile he is now still at 50 years old... Grogu is likely in a nursery in the Jedi Temple. He's probably not even walking around yet when he's in the Jedi Temple.
Still trained by several masters.
Yes.
Because they rotate them out to prevent attachment.
Before walking?
Yes. Yes. You don't want attachment.
You can't communicate with the thing, but you're going to teach it to use force powers before it can walk?
Yes. Yeah. Kyle,
if you want something and the force is strong with you, it'll come to you.
You can communicate through the force. They commune with animals on a regular basis that are force sensitive and non-force sensitive in the Star Wars universe. There is a long establishment of this.
What's the point of a master if you could just come out in fetal position?
No, they
being
are
able to like lift things with your mind.
They're not singular. Jedi Masters is a class. So you have Jedi Knights. You have the Jedi Counselors, and then you have the Jedi Masters who are on the High Council. So masters are on the Council, and the Council are all teach within the Youngling School usually, because they all learn different things from each master. So yeah, so I'm telling you, Grogu is like, infantile back then. It does work.
Okay.
We got to see Boba Fett come back, and he was actually awesome.
Did he do something for once?
Yes.
Yes.
He did everything.
Did he have a rocket launcher?
Yes.
Well, that's all I need to know.
No. Kyle, not only does he have a back rocket, which he fires into one ship, which makes it crash into another ship in a giant fiery explosion, he also has knee rockets.
He has knee rockets?
Yes. So pretty much what happens is, like, Ahsoka sends Mando and Grogu to Tython to go to, like, pretty much the first Jedi temple and told him, like, if Grogu reaches out through the Force... he might be able to find a master rule train. I'm like, I can't do it. Like, I have too much baggage with this specific sort of thing. While, you know, Grogu's communing with the Force, Boba Fett shows up with, I forget what her character is, but it's Ming-Hwa. She's been she was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and she's been in like a couple, I think she was in Battlestar Galactica as well. She's just a generally really, really good TV action star.
Ming-Na Wen.
Ming-Na Wen, thank you. But Boba Fett shows up and is just like, I'm not here for the child. I'm here for my armor. It's mine. And pretty much Empire ends up landing, attacking them and such. So Boba Fett goes and takes his armor. So you actually get to see Boba Fett fight for the first time. So he's essentially taking on a battle. He's one-awning like a battalion of stormtroopers with his double shot gauntlet on one arm, his disintegration pistol in the other. But before he gets his armor, he just had a giant hooked stick and we're just bashing stormtroopers' head in so their helmets were exploding.
Literally, that was the coolest thing I've ever seen, was all the armor just shattering.
So, I know it's kind of not canon or anything silly, but Boba Fett's image to me will forever be tarnished because of the actor who played him in the original trilogy. When you see him unhelmeted, it's just the silliest... It does not matter. No. Not the actor who portrays Boba Fett. The guy who is the physical body for Boba Fett in the original trilogy is pretty much just think like the cheesiest mustache, thick glasses.
It's like, you talking about this shriveled up testicle?
No.
No. Well, one thing that's really cool about Mando's actor is it actually is the same actor as Jango Fett from the prequel trilogies, because Boba Fett ultimately is a clone.
And I thought it was really cool.
One of the other things that they kind of brought back in, because something that George Lucas had kind of messed up, is he said that Jango Fett wasn't a Mandalorian. And of course, that pissed off Mandalorian fans, because Boba Fett's the original Mandalorian. So they're like, that doesn't mean you can't do that. You can't make him not a Mandalorian. They've sort of retconned that. Boba Fett, to prove the armor is his, shows what they call like a chain code, which essentially is just pretty much the history of the armor. And people translated it, because of course people did, because they know how to speak they know how to read Mandalorian. Not only does it, you know, just give his name, blah, blah, blah. One of the things it references in that coding is Concord Dawn, which came from a comic book of, and they also reference it, the Mandalorian Civil War. So it reestablishes Jango Fett as a foundling, as a Mandalorian, which kind of implies Boba Fett gets to be too. So they make him a Mandalorian again. They fixed one of George Lucas's many, many screw-ups.
So at this point, I feel like you just do whatever you want with it.
Kind of.
Like, you could just write like a random fan page and like slap it up there. And so that's what I was trying to think of, was fanfic. Yeah. And someone could just like take it and run with it and no one would question it.
I mean, that's one thing that's been... that's one thing about Star Wars, but mostly the original trilogy, is that it inspired so many different people to get into film. And a lot of their first stories that they played around with when they were messing around with a camera in their backyard, where they were telling their own versions of Star Wars. There's an entire version of the original Star Wars movie remade just by people taking like 30-minute segments and making them with whatever they had around the house. So like, it'll switch between like claymation or people with like cardboard suits.
I will always remember that the Microsoft DOS thing that... I don't know if you guys ever... I can't remember.
I know exactly what you're talking. So it's not Microsoft DOS. You're talking about the... there's a command in the command line. I believe it's Utilithon In, where essentially in the command line, it will start playing the scroll for Star Wars, and it'll play out the entire thing of Star Wars in the command line in ASCII art. I'll figure
I remember that.
Yeah, I used to play it at Teleperformance when I was bored. I would watch Star Wars in the command line, a very primitive version.
Why not?
Megan, have you decided how you feel on Grogu's name yet? Do you love him? Do you hate him?
Grogu is cute. Like, he's adorable. And even when, like, he's just, like, walking around and he's, like, super oddly animated, I think it's hilarious.
Puppet.
I think, yeah, he's a puppet. Grogu is fine. It's fine. I don't hate the name or anything. It's just, that's what his name is.
I like Grogu. I think it suits him. I think it's cute. And I think there was a lot of wrong ways to go. And I'm glad they didn't give him a Y name. It's consistent with the species that we know. It's two syllables, but it's.
GoPro. I'm just going to keep calling him Baby Yoda.
It'll be a while to adjust, but once Grogu is on all the merchandise, you'll change. It'll be beaten into you. But on that note, folks, we do have to wrap up the show here. So I do want to thank you guys all for tuning in, of course. And if you want to continue the conversation online with us, you can do so on our Facebook page at facebook.com/ThunderGeekSpeak or follow us on other social media on Twitter and Instagram. Of course, Chris and Kyle have been streaming on their respective Twitch pages at twitch.tv/FrozenVerse727 or Chris the Tripod. Well, of course, we're your Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU or around the world at luradio.ca. I'm Andrew.
I'm Rob.
I'm Megan.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Chris.
And we're your Thunder Geeks. We'll see you next week.
My name is Nevaeh. I lost my foot in a lawnmower accident. Now I teach other children how to play safe. Kids shouldn't play near lawnmowers. Lawnmowers are very loud. The driver wouldn't be able to hear you if you were playing anywhere near. It's very important to be cautious.
Whatever game you play, play safe.
A message from the War Amps. Learn more at waramps.ca.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Check out the Emperor, the Universe Explorer. Treat them seas like the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, leaving these niggas open like the box of Pandora, with styles that's newer than the world order. Approximately 3/4 in y'all of water. I scrape the torture, then orchestrate your torture with roots and culture. The pilgrimage to the line.